So you have joined today to listen to us, and we're talking about authors and writers, and we have a full program on how to get published. It's like the six steps to get published. Now, we all know as a writer that it takes a lot more than six steps. So this is just kind of an overview for you to get started for those of you that want to write. Now, there are so many ways that you can write. You can do blog posts, which Sally has a blog. And we're going to let Sally tell us about that in a moment. Sandy has published several publications. I have one published collaborative author publication, and I'm getting ready to launch my second one April 27th. So I'm excited about that. But there's a million and one ways that you can publish. And for those of you that are just posting on social media, that's a form of publishing. You're putting your words out there. And so with that said, let's see, we have a seventh person. I just want to make sure I don't miss anybody. So sorry that I have to jump over here. There, we got Cynthia. All right, now we've got everybody on. So there are seven in the audience and three of us here on the I'll call it on the stage. And so we're talking about publishing. And so there's all kinds of ways. And so for those of you that are even just doing something on social media, you're putting your words out there. And so all of this kind of pertains to you when we talk about the topics we're going to write about and the editing. And then if you do want to put together even blog posts into some sort of a publication, you can upload that into Amazon, you can self-publish, or you can go clear on the other side of the spectrum and you can publish traditionally. And we talked about the different ways to publish last meetup. And for those of you that are interested in hearing that replay, you can go to kathybinner.com and simply scroll down to the authors and writers section. And I'm going to show you that next. And then we're going to talk today about the eight different versions of editing. A lot of people are like, especially in these writers groups, if you're on Facebook and you're in any of these writers groups on Facebook, you see people all the time that go, "Hey, I need an editor." And of course, my first question is, what kind of an editor? You know, there's all different kinds of editors. And so, and again, depending on what you want, it comes with the price tag. So the more editing that you want done, you know, the higher the price tag. And so a lot of folks are like, I don't e didn't even know there were different types of editing. And so that's what we want to do in these calls, is to make you aware of all the different things that are going on out there so that you at least know what questions to ask. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I don't know what I don't know, and so I don't even know what to ask. And as you get more immersed into the world of writing, the more you'll see how it all fits together. And there is a rhyme and reason to it. So, and the more you're here, the more you'll understand. And that's what I want to show you next. Now, I am going to make Sally my co-host, and I am also going to make Sandy my co-host. And that way, you gals can see who's coming into the room as well. And we've got some more folks coming in. So
Gabby,
bear with
can
me
you
here.
see me?
Yes, I can see you. I can see that you're there. Everyone in the audience is just on chat only, and only Sandy, myself, and Sally are actually up front. And the
Okay.
rest of you are on chat only. So we'll ask you to mute while we go through this part of the presentation. So, Debbie and Cynthia, I'm going to mute you. Debbie muted. Okay. And then we're going to open it up for questions. So bear with us. And I need to ask Sally and Sandy, can you see folks that come in as an attendee? We have 10 in the room now. Can either of you see that by clicking on the participants button?
I see they're up on the screen, so.
Okay. If down at the bottom, if you're on your computer where it says participants, it should show, it shows 13. So we've got somebody in here that I don't have. I'm trying to get everybody unmuted, or I'm sorry, not unmuted, but actually up to talk so that when it's time for questions, they don't have to type all of that in the chat. Yeah, I think, okay, so there's a total of 13 in the room. There's 10 that are guests in the audience, and then three of us. So there's a total of 13. If that number changes, can one of you simply click them in where they can talk, where they can chat? If you see that. If not, I'll try to jump over and do it. Anyway, I'm gonna, because once I share my screen, then I lose everybody. And that's what I'm gonna do next, is share my screen. So again, I want to welcome everyone for being here. And the first thing that I am going to do is share my screen and show you where all of this information is. So this is the Kathy Binner International Academy, and this is where everything is parked, if you will. And so when you come to this page and you scroll across the menu to the More button and click down on More, you will see the authors and writers. Does everybody, can everybody see my screen? Yes, okay. So here's the authors and writers. When you click on the authors and writers, this is where you will see our information. And right here is the free replays. So all of you can simply open up an account with teachable.com. It's free. You can just tap in. And once you're there, you can come into this free authors and writers replays. And that's where you'll find the replay that we did on the different types of publishing. Then here is the course, and that's what we're going to jump to today. And I want to show you how it's kind of laid out. This is everything you need to know to create and monetize your writing. And it tells here, you know, who's it for, what is it, when is it, where is it, why, and how, and all that. But here are our topics. And last month, we talked about choosing a publishing route. We're talking about editing your draft today. And you can see as we go through, these are our topics. So you can see there's some great topics there. And so now I want to scroll down. And again, we did the publishing route. And today we're going to do this editing. And I'm just going to give you an overview, and then we're going to open it up for questions, because many of you are already published. So first of all, in the realm of writing and publishing, editing plays a crucial role. And I don't know about you, but I'm not really good at grammar and writing sometimes. So I do need some of the tools. You know, some of us use Grammarly. There's all kind of editing tools out there. But there's nothing better than just a good paid editor that does this for a living. So if you're going to take the time and the money and the effort, and you're going to put together an entire publication book of some sort that you're going to either self-publish or you're going to go through traditional publishers, you definitely want to get your work edited. There's nothing that turns off a reader more than poor editing in your manuscript. So here is what you need to know. There is a developmental editing. This stage focuses on the overall structure and content. It talks about the plot. It's the pacing. It's the character arcs. It's just the overall work to see if it is engaging to get you from the beginning to the end. That's the development editing. And sometimes we need that. I'm in the process of writing my very first novel. It's a mystery novel. And, you know, I've got all these parts and pieces, but I have a feeling I'm going to need this developmental editing when I get to the other end to make sure that my plot development and everything just flows the way it should flow for your readers. Now, because again, I'm going to back up and say this. Books are business. And if you want to monetize any of your writing, then you have to make it sellable. And this is one of the most important ways to make it sellable, is to have some good editing before you publish. So anyway, developmental editing. Let's go on to structural editing. It's known as, and I have a hard time saying this word, substantive editing. I have a hard time getting that second T in there, substantive editing. Structural editing involves examining the organization and flow, and editors assess the arrangement of the chapters, the sections, the paragraphs, ensuring a logical progression, okay, the structure of your book or of your manuscript. And then you have an editorial assessment. It provides an overall evaluation of the strengths and weaknesses and areas for improvement. Now, I don't know about you, but for those of you that are writers and that have been published, you know that something you publish almost comes, it almost feels like it's your baby. You know, you've given this book birth. And sometimes you get a little anxious when somebody's going to start giving you some critiques or criticism about your work. I'm here to say, please allow your editors to have the freedom to tell you what they think. They do this all the time. Once you find a great editor that does this, they're just trying to help you make your manuscript more sellable in whatever format you were trying to publish. So don't poo-poo their thoughts or their comments or their questions. Now, again, at the end of the day, you've got the final say. So you can say, I'm not going to do what they want me to do there, but take it into consideration at least and think about it. Okay, because they're going to make even some recommendations for further development or revision. Now you've got the line editing, number four. Line editing focuses on refining the language and style of the manuscript at the sentence and paragraph level. Editors pay close attention to clarity, conciseness, and tone, ensuring that the writing is polished and effective while preserving the author's voice. And this is what we most often, I think, we think what editing is where they're actually looking at the language of the sentence and paragraph level. We don't think about the editorial assessment or the structural editing or even the developmental editing. And then we move on into number five, which is copy editing. Copy editing involves fine-tuning the mechanics and technical aspects of writing, such as your grammar, your punctuation, your spelling, your consistency. Copy editors also check for adherence to style guides to ensure that the text follows established conventions. And sometimes we think about that being part of editing. And then, of course, we always think about proofreading, and that's the final stage. And so many of us, we want to proofread the first, as we're writing, and we get stuck trying to write because we're trying to write and proofread at the same time. But because I don't know, maybe back in school we thought as we're writing our papers for school, we usually waited till the last minute. I don't know about you, but I would wait till the last minute, and then all of a sudden I'm trying to write and edit and get it all ready so I can turn it in because I ran out of time. And so we always think about proofreading as part of the editing process, and it should be the final stage of your editing before publication, because you really need all of those earlier steps of editing before the proofreading. It focuses on detecting and correcting errors in spelling, grammar, punctuation, and formatting. Proofreaders meticulously review the manuscript to ensure that it is free of those mistakes and it's ready for publication. And then there's that word again, I have a hard time saying. Substantive editing. Substantive editing combines elements of developmental editing and line editing, addressing both the content and the language of the manuscript. Substantive editors work closely with authors to strengthen the narrative structure, refining the writing style, and polish the manuscript for publication. And then not to leave this one off, especially if you're writing something that requires facts and figures, or if you're writing historical, you have to have a fact-checking editing. Fact-checking editing involves verifying the accuracy and reliability of factual information presented in a manuscript. Editors conduct thorough research to confirm the authenticity of the sources, the quotations, the references, ensuring that the content is credible and factually accurate. So those are the eight areas of editing. You can find those again. This is the overview. You can find those again right here in the Academy. And once we go down, we're going to talk about getting feedback from your editors in this category, and then titling your manuscript, formatting your book for publication, designing an eye-catching book cover, writing the publisher-ready book description, creating a book launch, and then publishing your book to online retailers, and then the most effective book marketing strategy. So that's what we have yet to come. So anyway, I want to open it up to anyone that has questions. I know a couple of you need to jump off at 12:30, and I want to open it up to anyone that has questions. And I'm going to check my audience again to make sure. Let me see, we've got 14 folks. I just want to
We've
make
had
sure.
one new person jump on, so.
All right, I'm trying to see who that is to make sure I can allow them to talk. Here we go. We've got Leah, so we'll make sure Leah is on. Yes, thank you. All right, so any questions? I want to jump over, and Sandy, I'm going to go to you first. And Patrick, I see your hand up, so I'll click on you in just a moment. Sandy, tell us a little bit about your writing and how did you do your editing on your publications?
Well, a lot of it, my benefit was the fact I was a high school English teacher. So I had a lot of those proofreading skills kind of honed in, but I needed an editor. The company that who hired me to write the biographies, they had a professional editing staff. So they did the bulk of everything you see. And in a biography is more timeline oriented. So the whole kind of flow needed to be there, but in a different sort of an angle. But otherwise, I just recently had a novel that I had finished and I gave it to someone who liked the genre. And that person read through it going, okay, this is the whole world that I love. And she went at it from what's working and what doesn't work. So it's a jumble of different things.
Okay. So when you actually, again, you've got a lot of the skill set yourself because of being the English teacher, and I envy you that, because English was my favorite subject in school, but I still need a lot of editing when I'm writing.
Sure.
And,
too,
and I,
you.
And I understand that and I accept that.
Oh,
now for me, my book was a collaborative effort and, the publisher that I went with is, and again, we talked about all the publishing options last month, but mine was a hybrid type publisher and editing came with the package.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciated that. And again, because it's a collaborative effort, not only was her editor editing what I wrote, but they were also editing several authors being in the same publication as a collaborative of effort to make sure that everyone's story flowed in the right order. And so there was a lot of work that went into the editing process on a collaborative effort. And I can really appreciate that. Now, when it comes to me doing blogs or something on a much smaller version, I am using a lot of the tools that are online, like Grammarly. There's, you know, a million and one tools out there that you can use. And so I am using some of those when I'm just publishing like blog posts, that sort of thing. So anyway, Sandy, thank you so much. I appreciate your comments. Sally, how about you? When you're publishing your blogs, what process do you go through or do you go through a process for editing before you publish?
I write my blog in Word first.
Okay.
So I just kind of spew out everything. That's a bad word. It's kind of I put everything down that I'm thinking of, and then I go back and condense it.
Okay.
And go through. I guess I should say I'm self-editing.
Okay.
But I use those tools too because it's a blog. It's not a book. That and I'll give you an example if I may. And this is a proud mom moment anyway. But Paul is coming out with a book. Well, he has come out with a book. It'll be released March 5th, but he's doing
now,
book tours now.
Paul is her son, by the way, for those of you that are listening. So go ahead, Sally.
He's an astrophysicist. He just came out with a book called Rescuing Science, and it's restoring trust in science. You know, science has taken a big hit in the past 3 years. But when he wrote this book originally, it was called, I forget what it was called. Anyway, but he went through the editor process and one editor just didn't like it. So he couldn't publish it with that publisher he went with. So this has been a long process for him.
Right.
But now he's done it. This is his third book. So he's used to the process. But
Okay.
That for me, for right now, I self-edit.
Well, I can really appreciate that. I'm looking here. It looks like Barbara says, she's looking. Yeah, she said she thought she was on for an interview today, but then she, I don't know, got confused or something. So I'll have to circle back to her. Sorry for the hesitation, but I just got the email, so I was just reading her email. So when he started, did he know he wanted to write? And in the very beginning, he was doing a lot of things in his field. And then you said this is his third book. Is he using the same publisher and editors that he's used all? This one's totally different, am I right?
Yeah, because he had
Okay.
to find a publisher, one that would take his book. The original book was called A Sickness in Science. And there was something in it that one of the editors just didn't like. Out of five editors, one editor just got the deal. But isn't that
Interesting.
interesting? Yeah. But it was a scientific book, so there's a whole different criteria
Okay.
you have to go through.
Wow, I can't even imagine editing something scientific like that. Talk about the Patrick wants to know what your son's name again. He wants to
Paul
look him up.
Sutter. Paul M. Sutter.
Sally, thank you for that. And I'm going to check it out as well. I've checked out a couple of his earlier books. I'll have to check this one out. Patrick, go ahead and unmute, and you had a question.
Yes, I have a question. I'm new to this whole writing process, and I'd like to learn as much as I can about it before pursuing this, like maybe a side hustle down the road. Do you know of any really good AI websites that help people like me learn how to write, and also to, one of the biggest things I struggle with writing is not using filler words, so I need to focus on using less filler words and get my point out concisely and be direct, something I need to work on.
Well, and you ask if there were any AI. There are, and again, I do have to preempt this with my opinion. You've got two schools of thought on AI. You have this group of authors that say never, never, never. If you're using any kind of AI, it's not your writing. It's all artificial intelligence, and they're totally against it. Then you have the other group that is kind of like you see them all over Facebook, oh, click here and let AI write you an ebook in 30 minutes and make $1 million. And so, they're trying to even sell the whole idea of having AI just write your manuscript for you. Then, of course, and as usual, there's a million and one hybrids in between. For those of us that are just using Grammarly, Grammarly is an AI. For those that are using Word, where Word can spell check and grammar check, that's an early version of AI. And so the first thing that you have to decide, Patrick, is how comfortable are you using AI? And if you are going to use AI to actually take something you've written and totally rework it to make it sound better, if that's what you're thinking.
Yeah, I use ChatGPT is very I'm very comfortable with AI. Being a
Okay.
millennial, I really like AI. It's helped me a lot with thinking and coming up with ideas. And I use ChatGPT as a writing tool to help me like figure out like what topics to write and how I'm going to write it and all that,
So again, right in line with what you're saying, it depends on how much you're going to use it and whether you're going to use it as a tool for some ideas and then write your own manuscript, or whether you're going to actually have it writing the manuscript for you, or editing your manuscript for you. So there, again, there's a million and one places that you can fall on that spectrum.
Oh
And
yes.
and
And
Leah made,
also
go ahead.
coming up with ideas like, ChatGPT could help you formulate your ideas and how you want to go about creating it with the steps to create it and all that.
Exactly. And again, you have to decide what you're comfortable with. And Leah made a comment in the chat. She says that the vast majority of short story publishers and short story magazines I've seen refuse to publish anything that has been written with AI. Excuse me. And when you say written with AI, I don't know how those publications can tell if you've used it as a tool for ideas and then you wrote your manuscript. you know, there's no way they can tell that you're using it as a tool. They might be able to tell just the way it reads if you've had the AI write your manuscript for you. Because if they've seen stuff that's in your voice and now this AI material doesn't kind of fit your voice, they're going to go away. You know, what is this? And AI also kind of has a, how do I say it? It has a way of presenting the material that makes it seem like AI. And so folks that the editors, especially of these short story publishers and magazines, you know, they're editing all the time and they probably can spot something that's maybe AI sooner than the average reader. So my guess is that you'll have to just decide how much or how little you want to use AI and make it, you know, make that decision if you're ready, if you can take the heat. If you can take the heat from having it write your manuscript. But I think at the end of the day, and Patrick, this is going to be my summation of the AI conversation so far, is at the end of the day, I think you have to decide who is your audience. And I think there is a place for creativity across the board. And so even those Facebook gurus that are saying, hey, you know, for in 30 minutes, you can AI can write you an ebook and you can, you know, make $1 million. If I just need a little how-to book, like how do I do this? I don't know that I really, if I was the audience, I don't know they really care if AI wrote it or if somebody else wrote it. I'm just after the information. So I think you have to ask yourself, who is your audience? If you're wanting to get a classic out there and it be your work and you get paid and get kudos for it, I think you're probably going to want to just use AI as maybe an idea tool, but not to actually write the manuscript. So
I would rather write the manuscript on my own, but there are tools out there that can help you formulate your ideas, not necessarily AI, but there's different websites like kind of help with writer's block. So one of my biggest concerns that I'd probably struggle with is maybe like writer's block and how to get past it and all that, you know, that's
right. Yeah, I agree. I think you're on the right track, Patrick. So yes, thank you for that. We had Megan next. Megan, what is your question or comment?
Hi. So I have been writing my whole life and I finally have a piece that I'm comfortable enough to publish. It needs editing, like, but the draft is there, which I'm super excited about. But thinking about editing, what I know about having a professional edit it or somebody else edit it is usually expensive. And so my concerns are financial. Do you have any tips or resources or something that would, I could do it myself or like a more cost-effective way? Because from what I know, like professional editors, it's a couple thousand and sometimes it's way more than that, you know?
Right. And so your actual question is what having a more cost-effective way?
Yeah, like what were your thoughts on like cost-effective resources, or do you think it's plausible for me to edit my manuscript myself like completely?
Wow, that's a big question. I would start self-editing and get it as refined as possible. But again, I think you have to go back and ask yourself, who's the audience and what is the material about? Are you wanting to write a classic novel and hopefully it becomes a classic and you want it to, you know, to reach, you know, zillions of people for years to come, then, I would go with an actual editor. And again, you're going to have to do your homework to find someone that you're comfortable with, but the more of those 8 types of editing that you do, the more cost it's going to be to you. So I think, you know, I think again, that those are tough decisions. Those are tough decisions.
Do you think like if I out of the, cause I took notes on all the different types of editing. Thank you for that. If I could do as much of it as I can, maybe it would end up being more cost effective to just kind of like send it out for like proofreading or copy editing, if I can get the rest of like the structure stuff down?
Again, you can. It depends, I think, on your skill set and your background. I personally am such a new writer that I'd be afraid that I'd miss some major things. Sandy, what are your thoughts?
You know, you want to write the story, the whole thing yourself without worrying about any of the editing part at this point in time. Once you're done with it, you can start again and look at it now that the story's done and be able to sort of look from an objective outside point of view now that you're not as lost, not as swimming in the story as you were. Then if proofreading, where it's the grammar part that bothers you the most, then there's always somebody. There's a good friend who knows grammar and all that avenue very well. Offer them $50. Or if you have a teacher that you knew who might have some time to go through it, and try in your own circle. I bet you there are some folks that really know the proofreading end of it. If it's developmental, like does this story, if you have subplots, and I'm going to pretend you're doing fiction. If it has, If it has subplots, which means there's a couple different characters doing different things throughout the main storyline.
Oh yeah, that's pretty much, like, I mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. That's like,
no, go, please.
It's kind of, it's a drama. It's kind of like romance and it's got a lot of scandal in it. Yeah. It's funny because I wrote this 2 years ago when I was taking a break from the novel that I've been trying to work on. And I just refound it a couple days ago. And I was like, my God, this is amazing. Like if I could just edit this up and then get my ducks in a row, like I could publish this year. But it is fictional and it's like drama based. So there's going to be a lot of subplot. That's the majority of the plot, honestly.
Yeah. Well, so you have a done story. The story is done. Find somebody who reads that genre. And just say, would you, and nobody on necessarily on a professional level, but just somebody who just loves reading that genre, and ask them, would you please? And there you go. Someone in the chat already says they offer editing and proofreading services. And
I see that.
So, you know, they're out there. There's, if you go to, what is it, Wattpad? There's a couple places you could go online to say, I'm looking for a such and such editor. If you're in a writer's gathering, there's one in that meets in the Dayton, Ohio area. And you could just sit at their monthly meeting and say, you know what I need? And they say, well, yeah, I'll do it for you. Especially if they love the genre you're writing in. You're just giving them extra kicks because they can interact with the story itself.
So I'm not wrong in thinking, because I'm not worried about the developmental pieces. Uh-huh. I have a lot of experience. I've written manuscripts before. I have a lot of experience doing that. Good. So it's feasible to think that I could get through the majority of the editing myself and then maybe send it out for proofreading.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. And if you're going professional, if you're having a traditional publisher go for it, they will, and they're going to get really into the story itself. And if that is singing, they have editors on their staff who will, you know, do the proofreading, the heavy duty proofreading.
Right. I think I'm self-publishing this one. And then I am still working on that novel that I had said I took a break from to write this. So the novel I might try to find a traditional publisher for, but this, I think I'm just going to do on my own and kind of just like establish myself. I've been writing for 25 years and I've never published. So this is like huge for me, you know? So I just want to be able to say like, I published something, you know? So thank you very much.
Sure. Sure,
Megan,
sure.
I want to say, and you can't see it because it came out just to the host and panelists, but Blair, you see Blair Carney here on the call. Blair says, I offer copy editing and proofreading services.
Okay.
So maybe
Blair,
maybe.
I'm sorry, I can't see her. What is her last name?
Carney.
Can you spell it?
Carney.
Okay. And then I'll look her up then. Thank you.
Yeah. So again, connect with each other, because that's what this group is about. Not only is it to help answer our questions and give us an overview of trying to get published, but it also is a way that we can make connections with each other, because sometimes the answer is right here in the group. Yeah. So I love that.
If you don't mind, I had one other little question. At the beginning of this meeting, you had mentioned about Teachable and being able to do replays on past meetings. How do I find that, get to that? Just go to Teachable?
Just kathybinner.com and it'll take you right to my homepage.
Okay. And then from there, I'd be able to find the Teachable thing?
That puts you right into Teachable, the kathybinner.com, and then look for the authors and writers.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I missed that at the beginning. I'm sorry.
Yep. So I put that in the chat. It's kathybinner.com. Okay, let me go back and look at some messages here. Oh, Barbara's on, but she doesn't have a password to sign in. Oh, that's interesting because there's no password on the program.
Is she looking for an I? Is she a what's it called? A user ID? Is that what she's looking for? Maybe
depending on how she's sitting in, she might need the user ID.
Yeah, I don't have a password on there. Sandy, I'm going to let you, I'm going to deal with Barbara here for a second. I'm going to let you field the question from Faith. Faith, you have a question. Go ahead and unmute.
Hi, my question was, I'm kind of concerned about my book right now because it's only 54 pages. It's 76 pages, but when I try to publish it through Amazon, it's only 54. It says it's only 54.
Wow.
So I don't get the gist between that, and I'm kind of doubting my, I'm kind of getting concerned because I don't know if I need to add more poems or if I need to take away. I'm just lost.
Are they telling you they're going by page count, not word count, because you're doing poetry, right?
I'm doing poetry.
Oh, wow. Well,
my confusion.
Yeah. I would see if there's a place for a question asks, what is the minimum page count for poetry books? And if they say, ask that question first. And then if they say, well, if they say it's 54, they must have laid it out differently than you did. And
that's what I'm thinking. That it was just condensed.
And that was my confusion because I'm trying to publish it on Amazon and I'm like, the minimum page count for Amazon is 72.
Okay, 72. And you say you're giving them something that's...
I'm giving them 76. My Microsoft Word page is 76 count.
Yeah.
But they're showing it up as 54. That's my confusion.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Figured I'd get insight from you guys, kind of figuring out. And I just read Amazon will print a book as low as 24 pages. So if your poetry is an epic poem, it could be almost a one book itself. Say, that's what I found online.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised they're restricting you, and yet there's that. Wow.
Well, I did publish it first on Barnes & Noble.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's an issue.
Sometimes Amazon likes to be the top of the mountain. And if you've already tapped into somebody else, they might be giving you that. But I don't know.
And I'm having some field days with Amazon and I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that mean I have to resell?
And you say Barnes & Noble is handling your book?
Barnes & Noble currently has my book right now. It's already at 68 pages. Uh-oh. The current page number is 68 for my book, but I've been trying to adjust it.
Yeah.
To make it measurable for Amazon.
Yeah.
But it should be able to be published.
It should, but unfortunately, if Amazon says we'll publish it if you do this, then unfortunately you have to do this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know what to think. And I've just been trying to get information from as many people as I can. So
yeah, Faith, I appreciate you connecting. First of all, I want to welcome Barbara. Barbara, hi. I'm glad you're here. I see you there. So just know I see you there. Faith, here's what I want to say. Go to thekathybinner.com and you'll scroll down my homepage and you'll see where you can click through and have a strategy connect call with me. And
yes,
go ahead and schedule a call there and let me do a little research on that and see if I can't find an answer for you.
Yes, I would appreciate that because I have been stretching myself thin trying to get, because I wanted to turn it into a series of posted. I'm doing this book into a series called Lighthouse.
Okay.
It's the Lighthouse series. combination trilogy book with a collections book at the end. And I'm like, I want to publish it on Amazon. My dad, my mom would probably kill me for that. Not literally, but figuratively. But
I get it.
I'm doing it. I'm doing it for myself because I want to be. I want to do it. I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for myself and to help people understand that there's not, you can have a voice in more than one way.
Faith, I appreciate you. And again, connect with me over on KathyBinner.com.
Yes. And how do I go about doing that again? I forget.
Yeah, you're just going to go to KathyBinner.com. And when that page comes up, scroll down the home page. I can show you here real quick.
Yeah, I'm already on the site. I'm just trying to figure out how to get to that.
I don't know if it's going to let me go back to. I'll see if I can get back to.
I would like a 30-minute coffee chat with Kathy.
That's the one. That's the one. Okay, you found it. Okay, perfect.
Yes, I did.
Anyway, schedule there, and then it'll say what is your question, and put your question there, and about the Amazon versus
Barnes and Noble.
I'll do some research and see if I can't find an answer for you. Okay.
I appreciate that.
All right.
Good luck, Faith. Hope to have a good response from you soon.
Yes.
Hopefully. It's been a rough couple weeks.
I can't wait to read your poetry. I love it. We're going to do one more question, and then we're going to turn over to Barbara, and I've got some questions for Barbara. Patrick, you had another question for us. Go ahead.
Oh, just lost train of thought. You might want to let someone else ask a question.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions before we roll over to Barbara, our guest today? And I want to welcome Elise. I see Elise jumped on, so thank you for being here. We've had a couple jump off and a couple others jump on, so this is great. All right. I want to say welcome to Barbara. Now, I've been talking with Barbara, and she's quite impressive. She's got this great website, so go visit her website. It's under her name. You see her name there. I like to call it our little Hollywood squares. So you see her name there in her little Hollywood square, and you can jump over to her website. But she has poetry, and this is her sixth collection called Watermark, Poems of the Johnstown Flood of 1889. Now, we started our call today, and I'll just kind of bring Barbara up to speed. We started our call today on the different types of editing. And boy, I imagine that there would be a certain amount of factual editing of facts and figures when you're talking about history. And so anyway, this is very exciting to me. I love everything that she's doing. But Barbara, can you tell us about your journey as a poet? What inspired you to start writing poetry, and how has your style evolved?
Well, I started writing poetry. Is my sound okay?
It is.
This is a new headgear get up for me. So
it looks lovely.
I'm echoing in the room. Okay. So I started writing when I was young. And in high school, and was sending my poems off to Harold Ross at the New Yorker, Dear Harold Ross, you know, atrocious poetry. And then I took an alternate path in my higher education and became a speech therapist, the practical route. And then in my 50s, I really, you know, realized that it's now or never. It's that, like, the turn in a poem, now or never, let's get to the point. So I went and pursued an MFA, got an MFA, and developed a really disciplined writing life, where that was my focus. So in terms of the evolution of my writing, I started writing mainly lyrical poetry. Of course, there's a narrative element to every poem, but mainly lyrical poetry, nature poetry. But an obsession that I've had is the Johnstown Flood of 1889, also called the Great Flood. And I'm from Johnstown. So this is it was a personal project, as well as a historical event that I really, that is so multi-layered narratively. And what I did for this was a lot of research, over 5 years, really probably closer to 10 years of research, of, you know, handling the artifacts, talking to people who are related to flood victims, you know, great, great grandfather type people who were, you know, like telegraphers along the railway and so forth. Anyway, it's a fascinating period of time. It's the Gilded Age, the Industrial Revolution mm-hmm. is happening. And there's so, like, as I say, the narrative is very multi-layered. So I developed more of a narrative style for this in terms of writing style changes. And the poems in this book, Watermark, are all, with a few exceptions, in persona. So they're all in the voices of the historical figures involved in the flood, Clara Barton, for example, and then the victims, many of whom were never identified. So they were coffined without a name. And there is a plot, there's a graveyard called Grandview, which is where my people are buried. And I've been there many times. And there's a plot there called the Plot of the Unknowns. There were almost 800 people who died without ever having been identified. I mean, it was so such a devastating event that some people were not even recognizable. Without getting too gory, I mean, parts and pieces of people that they identified through a ring or a key in their pocket or whatever. So anyway, I really just grabbed onto this topic. And this is a docu-lyric about the Johnstown flood written in the voices of the survivors and those who didn't survive. And most of the poems begin with an excerpt from the morgue book, which I was able to handle the original morgue book. And then I've sort of created, it's a mix of fact and fiction. I created a person from an excerpt that I would take from the morgue book. So anyway, that's the broad swath of what this is about. And my dedication to making this into a book, a docu-lyric, which is a historical poetry about historical events.
What draws you to those particular themes? I was able to dive a little bit into Imagine a Town, and I too came up through a lot of blue collar mm-hmm. Community type involvement. And so I was able to delve a little bit into that. And what actually draws you to these types of themes?
The drama, the okay, and the narrative being so multi-layered. It's not a simple event. It's not one episode, but it is a historical event that was life-changing in many, many ways. And I love history. I'm really just, you know, I've always been a history buff.
I didn't think I did in school, but now that I'm an adult, I love history as well. And I didn't think I did in school when we just had to read pages and pages and I couldn't really connect the dots. Right. And now that, and again, Sally is our in-house travel agent. And now that I'm able to travel to some of those historical sites, it makes such a difference. Mm-hmm. And so did you actually visit that whole area?
I'm from that area.
You're from there. Okay.
I'm from Johnstown. So I have a personal stake in the story. And I had heard about, oh, my dog is going to bark in a second. So
that's
here's
okay.
The mailman. Pardon me. So what is now the Flood Museum was the library that I used as a child, donated by Carnegie. And so that is now the Flood Museum, and I've been there many times and was there as a child, and the whole area is, you know, in my blood.
Okay.
I left when I was 18, but it's, you know, your place of origin becomes part of your DNA, right? So,
right,
yeah.
Right.
And then I had the privilege of working with the Park Service and, as I say, handling the original morgue book, which was really awesome. It was spooky. And it was compelling. And then I've been to the Plot of the Unknowns many times as I walk that graveyard because my people are buried there, and it's a beautiful graveyard. I mean, graveyards have great horticulture, don't they?
They do.
So I have a very personal connection to the story.
Well, a lot of the folks on this particular call today are writers, mm-hmm. or they are wannabe writers, or that new writers, sometimes some seasoned writers. We have all levels. And Patrick wants to know where he can find this Morgue book. And so I'll let you talk about that in a moment. But my question to you is, can you walk us through your creative process when you're writing poetry? Do you have any specific rituals or practices that help you get your inspiration?
Reading.
Okay.
Reading. I say to anyone who really wants to seriously write, read, 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 and then write. So my inspiration is other writers, what they're writing, the response I have to beautiful writing or to a compelling narrative really makes me want to sit down and write. So I would just say read everything you want to get your hands on that interests you.
Okay.
And then write. You can write. I do a series of workshops, and we give prompts to the people. And a prompt is a really great way to begin a poem, to think about rhetorical devices, craft techniques, topics, different moves in a poem. So there are books of prompts that you can get, or to do a workshop. Workshops are also great, the great way to really get inspired. Am I answering your question?
You kind of
got off track. Okay.
Yes. No, you definitely are.
You have to bring yourself to poetry or to writing, whatever kind of writing you do, every day in some way, whether that's reading, whether that's writing a few lines, whether that's looking up a subject, whatever it is, bring yourself to writing in some way every day.
Put it on the calendar. Have a writing time, have a writing closet, have a writing space, have some place that when you sit down, you're halfway there. You're already thinking about writing. And after a while, I'm here to tell you, you get excited when it's time to sit there, mm-hmm. because you've got all these ideas in your head and you can't wait to get to your writing closet or your writing area so that you can start writing.
Right.
Patrick he's still interested in, of course, the book that we were originally talking about. He wants to know, could he find this information at the Johnstown Library or Historical Society, or is it in the actual museum there?
It is in the memorial site that is a National Park Service memorial site. And I'll tell you, Patrick, if you're interested in that area and in that event, when you go, you have to make an appointment. And you're taken to a back room, you're given a special pair of gloves, and you must stand, and you are supervised by a park ranger. It is such a treasure. However, excerpts, or actually most of the Morgue book, is listed in one of the books I use for reference. I don't have it here at my desk, but I can certainly send that to Kathy to send on to you, that has the... it's right on the tip of my brain, but it's the Morgue entries are listed in the back, and it was done by Charles Reverend Beale, who he was in charge of the all these makeshift morgues that they had to set up. And then and the morgues, I'll just tell you really quickly, the Morgue entries were actually descriptions that were put on the lids of the coffins, a simple pine coffin, that were placed in these makeshift morgues, which were taverns, schoolhouses, whatever building still had walls and a roof. And then you would have the pine boxes with the bodies or the remains. And then on the lid, and the lids were kind of askew. And then there would be a tag with that entry describing, I have a number of them here in the book, physical features, tattoos, birthmarks, what kind of jewelry, what the clothing, etc. And then the people who could not find their loved ones would walk through the aisles of the morgue, of the makeshift morgue, read the tag on the lid, and if it matched their loved one, they would move the lid aside for identification.
Oh. So is that a website to go to?
The Johnstown Area Heritage Association, JAHA. But I will email Kathy that book, the name of the title of that book, and all the relevant information, and you'll find the morgue entries in the back.
You want to send me the website link so I can write it down in the chat?
I don't have it, and I frankly I don't know how to sign to go online while I'm still on Zoom.
Yeah,
I don't know. So I'll send that to Kathy too.
Yeah.
So
once I get it, I'll put it with the replay of this. So Patrick, you feel free to go to kathybenner.com to the replay, and I'll put all the information she sends me there.
All right.
So
thank you.
Patrick, you want the name of the where I can get the morgue entries and the website for the Heritage Association. Yep. I'll send that to Kathy.
Yes, thank you so much.
I'm not tech savvy enough to figure out how to go out of here and get back in and still be on. So
Faith says that poetry writing is a gift, and she says, thank you so much for sharing your story.
My pleasure.
Are there any particular poets or works of literature that have had a significant influence on your writing?
Oh my gosh. Well, right now we're teaching Merwin and Kunitz. I mean, those classic giants of American poetry. My favorite poet is Jane Hirschfield. She, to me, is a goddess of poetry, beautiful lyric poetry. In terms of this particular book that I've just written, Watermark, there is a book by Rachel Dilworth called The Magdalene Laundry. And it's also a docu-lyric that is about the in Ireland when unwed mothers or young women who were considered kind of like loose were sent, and they were required to do laundry. That's all they did, and they had to stay there when they had their babies. Their babies were snatched away and sent off for adoption. So it's a docu-lyric about that, and that was really compelling to me. Another poet who I really love, who writes about history and science, and is very learned, is Linda Beards, Bierds. She wrote The Profile Makers, which is about in persona about the Civil War. That's fabulous. Linda Beards, The Profile Maker. So there are many others. I could go on, but I don't want to ramble too much.
Well, I know that poetry, it often, it's very intimate and personal exploration of emotions and experiences. How do you navigate the balance between being vulnerable and being artistic? Is that a tough spot?
That's a good question, Kathy.
When you're writing poetry?
That's a great question. How much do you reveal? Mm-hmm. And it's really tricky because, you know, it's important to show some restraint, you know, so you don't want to get sentimental. If you're talking about a childhood event that is, you know, that has stayed with you and there's some nostalgia, you want to relay it, but not in a sentimental way. And that's really tricky. You know, restraint is everything. I read for a journal. I read for Sheila Nagig online. And I really, you know, I have an ear for when things, when word work gets into a poor me, or, oh, look at the trauma that I've suffered, or I'll never recover. I'm so sad. You know, you, and this is a good example of show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Say how you feel, relay an event, describe something that connotes how you feel, so that it's implied versus spoken versus said mm-hmm. in a raw kind of a way.
Great points. Great points. Thanks. Barbara, thank you so much for that. What message or feeling do you want your readers to take away from this latest work?
That life is so unpredictable. That here we have these lives. Johnstown, Pennsylvania, which is in like South Central Pennsylvania, very blue collar, for those of you not familiar with it. That we had this booming town in the late 1800s where we had immigrants flooding in with new opportunities. It was like the steel production center of the country for the railroad, which was moving out west, and so much promise. And then boom, the leisure lake at the top of the mountain, the dam burst in this really like once in a century storm, and town was wiped out. So that's what I take from it, is from the event, is that you can't take anything for granted. Count your blessings every day. I know that sounds kind of cliche, but in this case, it really does apply. That there are all these lives, and there, and everything is so transient.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have lives, we have all this promise, and the children who died, so many children. It's heartbreaking. And lest we forget, the mm-hmm. the wealthy who had their resort lake on top of the mountain did not maintain it. It was structurally lacking integrity in many, many technical ways, and they didn't care because it was better for their sport fishing. So lo and behold, the dam broke, and then all the non-privileged people who lived in the town, which is the foothill of the mountain of the Alleghenies, perished. Not all, but,
wow.
but 2,200. So there's that discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots, and the haves really not, in this case, dare I say, not caring. Their sport fishing and their leisure life was more important than the safety of the town, of the people who fueled the machines that made their profits. They didn't care enough to protect them. So we have to really, you know, it's just a social justice statement too. And I think that we always have to work toward social justice in whatever form that may take to make sure that everyone is protected.
Well, speaking of social justice, how do you see poetry, and especially poetry like this one, influencing culture, politics, or social change?
Oh gosh, Kathy, that's a hard one, because I am I don't write about political things. I wrote about one poem about January 6th, and it's hard to contain your feelings, your leanings, your biases. So I am not big on political poetry, but I think we can take, I am an Appalachian poet. And so I am invested in poetry that, and I think poetry that's about nature in the midst of, natural destruction, like, mountaintop mining, et cetera, that it's important that we're aware of that. And I think poetry can do that. In terms of politics, you know, let's get out and vote, but really I don't want to read about it in a poem. I just don't. But in terms of the, you know, protecting the land, there, I think it does have a place.
I think it does make a difference. I think mm-hmm. the readers can be inspired, and I think it does make a difference. Now, poems often will feature a vivid imagery or evocative language. How do you approach crafting some sort of a sensory experience for your readers? So what techniques do you use to actually bring your poem to life?
Well, that's also a wonderful question. Thank you. I am very invested in writing short form Japanese poetry. Haiku, Haibun, Tonka. And all of that poetry, because it's so condensed, so compressed, no unnecessary words, and it's all image-based. And the images are, poems are grounded in sensory imagery. So you want to bring in olfactory, gustatory, auditory, you want to, and even motion is a sense. So I really worked on that in my short-form Japanese poetry writing. The senses are so important, and it also goes into the show don't tell. Don't mm-hmm. tell me that it was beautiful. Give me some sensory information to say what color, what did it sound like, what did it feel like, what was the tactile experience. That is everything, versus telling the reader, this is what my experience was, or paint it in sensory terminology.
Yes, I love that. Faith, I see your hand up. I'm going to jump over to you in just a moment, but I do have a couple of more questions for Barbara. A lot of aspiring poets struggle with self-doubt or writer's block. What advice would you give to emerging poets to navigate those challenges?
Get a poetry partner. Poetry partner, be involved in a writing
group. That's a
group,
great idea.
Right off the bat, I have a poetry partner, Marion Starling Boyer, whom you've talked to here.
Yes.
And we really, gosh, you know, you buoy each other up. You're honest with each other about what works, what doesn't work in a poem, what makes your poem tick, and what, well, where could it be stronger? And if you can be involved in any kind of writer's group or a group like this, for affirmation, for support, for advice, that's key, because writing is such an isolated endeavor. You need to get out of your isolation and join in a community. And any literary festival in Ohio, we've got Lit Youngstown. Oh my gosh, Toledo, Columbus, there are so many writing events, literary events that cover all the genres. And then you hook up with people, you get feedback, you find new opportunities, and workshops. Oh my gosh, you know, you to get feedback. For this book, for the first time, actually the second time, I used a consultant, a manuscript consultant. And that was enormously helpful through Black Lawrence Press. They have a program. And that was great. And I got really good feedback about what could make the book stronger. So there are so many ways to, you know, to really build up your confidence, to get feedback, be affirmed, get involved. Mm-hmm. Yeah, reach out.
I love it. That's great advice. We're going to jump over to Faith for a moment. Faith, what question do you have for Barbara?
From a poetry writer to a poetry writer, I wanted to ask, how long do you have to be to write a poem or like a journey? I'm working on a book called Darkness, which is more of my journey through poetry and my journey through how I became a writer and the emotions I portrayed. And I was told in an editorial assessment, it's raw and authentic. But
I'm
don't
sorry,
know.
What is the question, please?
My question is, how raw and authentic do you have to be to write poetry?
Authentic, careful with raw. You want to really, round the edges of your rawness. It shouldn't be. You want to be authentic. You want to be real. You want to be honest. You want to be daring. But you have to, but the trick is to contain it in lines and images and a shape that readers are going to want to engage with. Okay. If something is too raw, the reader might kind of like, woof, you know, I don't know if I want to go there. For example, with this book, Watermark, some of the morgue descriptions were so raw, so gory. I don't want to subject anyone to that. I was horrified by some of the descriptions, the morgue descriptions, but I don't want to go there. You know, you can describe an event, whether it's personal or universal, without getting too raw. I won't go into my biases. I have many. So I think and here the thing too with, and I'm sure all of you are aware of this, revise. Mm-hmm. You know, too often I've been to a reading where someone says, I wrote this on the way over, I'm going to read it at open mic. Don't do that. You know, revise it, revisit it, read it aloud. How does it sound? And Faith, run it by a friend. You don't need to be too raw. And also, if it's something that's personal, make sure that it's also universal.
Okay.
Good point.
Yeah, so make sure that your reader can relate in some way, even if they haven't had that experience, that it resonates for your you know, reader walking down the street, whoever that might be. So try to make it universal, even when it's personal.
Okay. I appreciate
good
that.
Good luck to you. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Faith, for that question. Finally, tell us how we can connect with you, Barbara. How can we get copies of your poetry? And also, is there something that you have that's coming up soon or launching soon or something that you would like to let us be aware of?
Okay. Well, thank you, Kathy. First of all, my website is so under construction, shall we say. It is so really.
Always under construction.
Oh
we get
my gosh, I haven't, it's been really a long time. So you're not going to get anything too current on my website. Sometimes I wonder, why do I even have one? But I know it's not very professional, but I'm technically challenged. I'm now shopping around a chapbook of Haibun. Haibun is prose plus haiku, so it's a Japanese short form. And I've got a lot of readings, a lot of interviews coming up. I'm teaching through Literary Cleveland through the library system and some festivals. And really, this should be my impetus to update my website, right? So that
right.
So that you have all this listed, and I'm very active on Facebook. So I whatever I have coming up.
Oh well, then maybe that's the place.
That's the place. Yeah. Check me out on Facebook. Friend me on Facebook. I'm very active on Facebook.
Thanks. Very good. I'll actually look up your link. And when I post the replay, I'll put the link to your Facebook there so that if folks go to the replay, they can just click through and they'll be right there on your Facebook page. So we'll do that for you.
Thank
you. 'Cause that way you can post what you have coming up there and we can find you there. So I appreciate you so much, Barbara. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We don't have a lot of poets that come on, and I love that whole genre. So thank you so much for participating with us today. And before we go though, and I realize we're a little after one, I want to jump
one
over.
Question.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Sorry for interrupting. I asked a question in the chat. Do you guys have my email?
We do not. Well, we do. If you registered to be on the call today, I would have it there if that's what you mean. But if you want to connect with Barbara or with any of us, just go to thekathybinner.com and look at the replay. I will have a way that you can connect with me. You can connect with Barbara and you'll be able to connect with Sandy.
All right. Thank you.
Also, pardon me for interrupting. Also, I'm going to put a link to Alternating Current Press, which is the press that published Watermark.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Yeah, so let me do that right now.
Okay, and while you're doing that, you can type that into the chat, make sure it says everyone. And while you're doing that, Sandy, tell us about what you have coming up.
Hi there, not only am I a writer, I also direct a writer's workshop in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Oh. It's the first full weekend in August. And this August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th at the Mills Park Hotel, my featured guests are, in a sense, mystery writers, Andrew Welsh Huggins and Jeffrey Marks, plus the Ohio audiobook narrators. But even though, and it's not a but they do a lot of mystery, and they're going to do a session together called The History of Mystery, but they're also talking about that process of writing. Andrew's going to talk about, well, both of them, about how do you get a short story idea to publication? And they're going to go through that whole arc. What about research, making research count? Jeffrey has quite a few biographies of classic detectives, classic mystery writers. And he says research is so important. How do you make it count? And Andrew is going to talk about revision, the nuts and bolts. Here we're talking revision here, the nuts and bolts of revision. Jeffrey is a publisher. He is the publisher of Crippen and Landrieu Publishing Company in Cincinnati, Ohio. And if you're going traditional publishing, then you probably need to know how to write a query letter. If you have a nonfiction book, you do need to know how to do a book proposal. So he's going to do something on that. Andrew wants folks to write in a session and go through it together and show how that formulates into something you can put out into the world. And we have a 3-hour demo by the Ohio Audiobook Narrators. They're not only going to tell you if you want to narrate your book, this is how you go about it, but also what do they do if you hire them to do it. And they hope to do a demo, which they'll take like 2 or 3 minutes of your writing and show you what they do. I have open mic readings. We have book sales is new this year for anyone registered there. It's the Mills Park isn't a huge place. So one book per person, you can come out and sell on that night. Those events on Saturday night, however, are open to the public to come browse and buy, we hope, and listen to your readings. That's it.
Sandy, thank you so much. And for those of you that are on this call, just know if you're within driving distance, and I don't know where everybody is coming to us from, but if you're within driving distance of Yellow Springs, Ohio, which is just right outside of Dayton, at the Dayton area, and you can look that up. It's a great venue, and it's not a super huge group. I don't want anybody to feel like, oh my gosh, there's going to be all of these, you know, all these folks there that are so much further ahead of me, and I'm going to feel so out of place. And I even sensed that in a couple of writing workshops that I've gone to, is that there's always a small group of folks that feel like they don't belong there, that everybody else is so much further ahead than them or whatever. This group does not make you feel that way at all. And I encourage you to sign up and join, and you can still get it at a great price before Wednesday. Am I right, Sandy, that Wednesday the price goes up?
Yeah, through Valentine's Day, and then the 15th goes up.
So but the next day, Thursday, goes up, mm-hmm. Yes. So I put it in the chat. It's called Into the Springs Writers Workshop. So click through and register. And again, I'll have to just be honest with everybody. Not everybody's budget is the same. And sometimes I don't know about you, but sometimes I don't stay right at the convention site because oftentimes those rooms are a little pricier. And oftentimes I will find a hotel just off of the convention site, and I can commute back and forth between there and the convention site each day. And there are several hotels in the area. If you look at it and feel like I really want to go and I can do it, but I don't want to pay the money. Now, it's always great to stay right at the convention because a lot of times the magic happens after hours and you're there in the lobby. And sometimes that's where the magic really happens. But if you have to choose, and financially it's an issue for you, choose some place to stay. There's several Airbnbs around there, and there's definitely places that you can stay and attend the workshop. So I will mention.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning that. I didn't know how much time I had, but that's it. I have made it so those featured guests, Andrew and Jeffrey, have to be available for everybody and any questions at almost any time throughout the weekend. And they are also offering private critiques. Your first 10 pages of your novel, follow it. It's a little extra. It's $50. And they will edit it for you. They will talk about it, sit with you for up to 15 minutes sometime outside the sessions. And Jeffrey will look at your query letter. It may be one page, but man, it has got to be the most important mm-hmm. page of your life if you're looking for a traditional agent. Thank you.
I love that. I love that. Sandy said in the chat for Barbara, she says, I'm from Youngstown and have a family in East Palestine. As you spoke, I was wondering if one day there will be writings on the train derailment.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It would be a really important topic. And again, that would be a narrative with many, many, many layers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not Manhattan, right? If it were Manhattan, mm-hmm. there would have been a swifter response, yes. Undoubtedly. Yes. And that's where, you know, that's where politics come in too. But even with Watermark, we've got politics. We've got the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And that's yep. very political. But I want to say, just tag on about the conferences. Many conferences, and you know, like Lit Cleveland, for example, they have scholarship programs.
Uh-huh.
And with the course that Marion and I teach, there's always 2 scholarship slots, always, that are available. Mm-hmm. You know, and you apply and blingo blango, you're in. So you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And also,
another reason to update your website, Barbara.
and then there are very affordable ones like Lit Youngstown is a gem. And mm-hmm. I think the registration is $45.
Yeah.
For 2.5 days. And it's so jam-packed with goodness, literary goodness. So sometimes it really is affordable. And check mm-hmm. out, and Lit Youngstown also has scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't afford it, you can get in, because everyone should have access to this same kind of literary goodness.
Yes. And here is what I want to say to those of you that are still hanging in here on our call is, so if you want to be a writer, surround yourself with writers.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be a writer, surround yourself with writers. Trust me, it does rub off. and you do get a sense of how the industry works. And that's the biggest question that I get from folks, is that they have this desire deep down inside of them that they want to write, and they don't have any way to connect the dots. They don't know where they fit in, how to fit in. And if you simply surround yourself with writers, whether it just be an online writers group or something local in your community, you can look those up, and just surround yourself with writers. You'll start to find your spot. You'll start to see where you fit into the picture. And what that does for you is it gives you the confidence to step out and say, I'm going to write something. I'm going to publish something. I'm going to start. And there's no ceiling after that. You can do as much as you want.
Yeah. And good advice. This is a good thing that you do, Kathy. If you feel that drive waning at least once a month on this Tuesday, on this Monday, you can mm-hmm. check in and listen to people who are excited again. And that rekindles some mm-hmm. of that flame that might be flickering a little too much. So definitely.
Yes, thank you for that. This has been a great call. I want to say thank you again so much to Sandy, my co-host. Sally had to jump off early. She had another meeting. And I want to say thank you to Barbara, our guest today. Thank you so much for sharing all of your thoughts and your writings with us. And to all of you that have listened and have had great questions. And again, go to kathybinner.com and scroll over to the authors and writers section. And you will see where to find all of the replays. And I'll put all of the links there in the description of the replay. And that way you can connect with Barbara, you can connect with me, you can connect with Sandy, and let us help you make your dreams come true.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Sandy, so much. Thank I appreciate you. This.
All continued, right.
Continued good writing.
Good to meet yes. you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll see everyone later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.